I'm John St. Augustine. Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. One more time, we're going to go up the down staircase in the outdoor, see if we can't make a little bit of sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. So it's the day after Christmas 2020. I hope this finds you well and safe and healthy wherever you might be listening in the world. I've had a little bit of a hiatus here. Some of it's self-imposed, and actually it's all self-imposed. Who am I kidding? As many of you know, I do a daily radio show, an international show, that airs in Washington, D.C. and New York City and in Beijing, China. And I'm doing that 7 days a week. Now, Full Disclosure, which is my middle name this year, John Full Disclosure, I tape those shows because the kind of schedule I'd have to keep in order to do a daily show with all the production that goes with it and the elements and all the rest of it would be near impossible. Those days are probably gone for me. But through the magic of technology, I can really tape 7 shows in about 4 or 5 days. So it gets to be a bit much, and I shut down production of that show, The Bridge, on the 18th. And as of this podcast for the Life 2.0 outing, I go back in a couple of days on the 28th, and we'll resume heading into 2021, which is very exciting. You know, there's a lot of things I want to talk about in this podcast. I hope to just kind of keep it brief and to the point, which for me is never easy. But I started out this year thinking that in so many respects, while I love doing podcasting and the immediacy of it and the connection to people and all the people who have been subscribers and the thousands of downloads, it's all really, really cool stuff to me. At heart, I'm a radio guy, meaning I'm a studio person, and it's different than podcasting as far as the reach and the platforms. And when I started this year, 2019, back in January of this year, I never would have guessed at all that the concept of traditional terrestrial radio would ever come back into my wheelhouse. Not only has that happened, but of course, then the shows are live in New York and Washington, and then they are live online at www.wcrw1190.com. You just little listen live button if you're not in those two cities. And then those shows become podcasts, and those are all on that same page. And I think we hit 122 shows in 100 days. It's been quite a run. But I'm built for it. Not built as I used to be for it, but I've gathered and girded myself to pull this together. I have an incredible team with me. My co-host during the week from Monday through Friday is Hu Yang. She is a revered and respected and vaunted broadcast journalist in China on China Roundtable, speaks better English than I ever will. We've had a great connection and friendship out of this, and I look forward to more shows with her. And then on the weekends, I have a former vaunted and top-notch and top-rated journalist in China named Bebe, who left the business, got married, has a little daughter, and she works with me on the weekends. And, you know, they are two very different people, but both bring so much to the table that I've learned and have been reminded of. The most important lesson I think that we should all be reminded of, especially at this time of the year, is that we're all just human beings, bottom line. And usually it's the headlines that keep us apart, but the lifelines are what bring us together. And that Bridge show is all about the lifelines. So you can find the headlines anywhere. They're easy to come by. They come and they go. They never last, they're not supposed to, and they are certainly not the thing that makes life worth living. The headlines are not that. The lifelines between people, how we connect, what we can agree upon, what we don't agree upon, how we handle those differences, the cultural differences that I have with these two young ladies, it's fascinating to me. And it's been an incredible crash course in human connection. I can't see them. They're 7,000 miles away from me. Every time we do these shows, and through the magic of the same technology that I tape this show, I'm able to talk with them in real time. And that's just the half of it. That's just the shows that the three of us do. And then we have our super producer, Simpson, who is a phenomenal piece of the puzzle, takes care of all the guests and all the scheduling and stuff like that. And it all fell together. You know, we've had guests from all over the world on this show. And of course, my friend Dan Mason, who is my radio brother, he's been in radio longer than I have, and at one point was the CEO of CBS Radio, 20 years there, and just one of the most respected guys in the business, and he's the one that opened the doors for me on this. So as we're heading into the end of 2020, I'm on that level so grateful that I've had this opportunity to do this show and to see where it goes. And the fact that we're having cross-cultural conversations, and I wrote the whole bringing the world together one conversation at a time concept for The Bridge, because that's truly what happens. So people are, you know, in New York City sitting in traffic listening to Hu Young and I talk about what it's like to have aging parents. That's a common thing. It's you know, something universal around the world. We just came off 2 days of songs, Christmas songs. And what a hoot. We had people calling in requests from all over, and people from Texas and New York and Chicago and LA and Vero Beach, Florida. And so in so many respects, I am once again reminded of the power that this platform holds and the responsibility that goes with it. And so as I kind of get ready to go back into all that after such a big launch, it's a energetic effort, to say the least, to get those things up and running. And it was a daunting task, but well worth the effort. As I get ready to go into that, I started thinking about doing this podcast, and this is a little bit of a different group. And you're all welcome, of course, to go listen to that show at www.wcrw1190.com, and they're all there. You can listen. It's a lot different than this, maybe. A little different, for sure. I can't say shit over there, quite frankly, because it's on terrestrial radio, so I use the word shirt. So if you hear me saying the word shirt on The Bridge, you know I really mean shit. Listen, for people listening to the show, you get it, right? Shit, I've always found fascinating what offends people and what doesn't. And I grew up with the word shit. In Chicago, shit is, you know, the shit. You got the shit. I'm going to take a shit. Give me some shit. I'm going to give you some shit. That spaghetti tasted like shit. God, you're the shits. It's just a shit word. It doesn't mean anything except for the connotation you ascribe to it. However, on this podcast, I am not bound by FCC rules. Over there I am, so I have to clean it up, and I use the word shirt. So if you wander over there and listen, you'll know why I say that word so much. It's not because of the shirts that I'm wearing. But as the year becomes closer and closer to the end, there's so many thoughts running through my mind. I thought, I'm going to pop the microphone on. It's been a little while. Everybody's been really busy, and kind of just check in a little bit and with a couple of thoughts that I had. And the one thing for me is, you know, Christmas, of course, is designated as the 25th of December, but the lessons of it, you would hope, are something that we make some attempt to live every day of the year. And my favorite Christmas movie is The Christmas Carol, 1951 version, with Alistair Sim playing Ebenezer Scrooge. There's some great ones out there, no doubt, and I'll talk about another one here in a second, but that's the one that I think I probably started watching when I was 8 or 9 years old. And I was captivated by his performance. I was captivated by the story. I was captivated by the lessons and the moral pieces of it. And it's such a, at points in that movie, that particular version is so gritty for me because it's black and white. And, you know, they really captured the dinginess of the time that Dickens was writing about way back in the day. And so I haven't missed that version literally since I was 10 years old. So I'm going to be 62 here in a few days. I've been watching it a very, very long time. And on one level, I could probably recite the whole thing. On the other level, it's like I just sit back and I'm reminded once again of the brilliance of what Dickens was saying 177 years ago. So much of what he talked about in A Christmas Carol is unfortunately still around today. These are timeless lessons because they're timeless challenges, because unfortunately, I think on a lot of levels, humans don't change much over time. And that's why when we sit down, at least for me, when I watch this movie, it goes right through me. I spent a few days with my son in Upper Michigan and had a little time to sit back and put a little something-something in a glass and ice cubes in there as well and just watch this again. And I started thinking about the lessons that came out of it. Of course, there's many. But the ones that are obvious that I think Dickens was talking about at the time was, you know, the fact that every one of us is flawed. Every one of us is flawed. You know, in that version of A Christmas Carol, Dickens really doesn't go into depth 100% on why his character is the way that it is, like Scrooge is that way. He was, you know, sent away from home. He lived in that school. His sister had to come get him. But they never really talked about the school. It was very much brushed over. But it was this disconnection from family and at Christmas that really, in some ways, created him to be the skinflint that he was. There was other factors as well. But that's like the number one thing. Everybody is a self-made person, but only successful people ever admit that. We're all self-made. And one of the walking papers I think we should all have, and look, I'm aiming pretty high here, because the fact of the matter, there's 7 billion people on the planet. There's 340 million here in the United States. And in my circle of influence, there's not very many. But that's okay, because it's the ripple effect is what matters most. And I don't know how critical mass is always reached in a positive way, but at least when I get on this microphone, I feel like I'm adding to that possibility as opposed to taking away from it. And because of that, because of the concept that, you know, we're all self-made people, so much of what I talk about on these shows, whether you realize that or not, is really about undoing what's been done, that we're somehow able to pull back the layers of our existence. They're able to see our lives a little clearly if we have the guts and the courage to do that without pointing a finger away. We point it at ourselves and say, look, no matter what's happened to me in life, it's not nearly as important as what I do about what happens. And that's on me. So you can spend a life of shaming and blaming. It changes nothing. And while I know that people have gone through horrible, difficult, terrible circumstances, the people who've taught me the most are the ones that went through those circumstances and came out better on the other end instead of bitter. You know, I think of my friend Captain Jerry Coffey quite often. Jerry was one of the longest held prisoners of war in Vietnam. There is, I'd have to think it's like June of 2018? I think I'd have to go back and look on the archives of this podcast. There's a conversation I had with Jerry a couple years ago. And he's had some medical challenges. He's in his 80s, but there is a pretty good podcast. I'd have to go find it. And you can find it on the page too. Just go back to the older episodes and listen to that over again. Because Jerry Coffey, as I said, one of the longest held prisoners of war in Vietnam, treated horribly by other human beings, came out better, not bitter. Not everybody can say that. And they're well within their reason and warrant to act as they feel they need to. But I kept thinking about Jerry over these years, and every time I get into a situation where I got a choice to be bitter or better, I think of him dealing with stuff I can't even begin to imagine and say, what right do I have to be bitter over the life I've been given? Ups and downs, sure. But was I held in the Hanoi Hilton, strung up on my thumbs and beaten? No. Was I starved? No. Did I have maggots and rats on me? No. I mean, you can go right down the list. So Jerry Coffey to me is like the, I guess he's like the litmus test on forgiveness and humanity. And he forgave all those guards. He went back and saw some of them. And I don't even know what that takes to be able to pull that off. So this year, all that's gone on in the world has been obviously serious chaos and turmoil. And there's been a lot of finger pointing. Matter of fact, I will tell you flat out on this show that I don't care where the pandemic started from my end, because I can't do anything about that. What I do care about is how do I respond to it? So there's always going to be something somewhere. There's always going to be something somewhere. How we respond to that something decides and determines everything. And that's been the way out for me, just like it was for Jerry Coffey. He didn't start the Vietnam War. You know, whoever shot him down, that one person or that one bullet or that one round or that one shell, you know, he could have spent a lifetime trying to find out exactly how he ended up in that position, but he decided not to do that. And I think of him often, especially during this past year with the pandemic, as I said, where there's all this finger pointing and you did the, you know, that changes nothing. It makes the hole deeper, if anything. So this whole response versus reaction thing has become paramount in the last few months for me. And I am amazed at what happens when a major real problem shows up, how the ones that we think are important go away. And I'm just going to use one example. I can come up with 10, but I'm not going to bore you to death on all of them. But there was this one that I kept looking for and kept looking for, and I didn't see it, and I didn't see it, and I didn't see it. And while thousands and thousands of people, 3,000 a day or more, have been dying from this pandemic for the last couple of weeks in our country, you know, the greatest nation on the planet, that one. I kept waiting to see for at least the month of December, you know, the inevitable war on Christmas. it's popped up for the last 20 years. There's always somebody saying that there's a war on Christmas, that, you know, as Christians, that we're being put upon and being subdued, and that we're not allowed to speak freely, and which is all a bunch of bullshit made up by the media to get numbers. And I kept watching for it and waiting for it. And what I realized is that we have a real problem here. People are really dying. And we really have to be careful on what we do and what we don't do, where we go, where we don't go. And there was no time to come up with some fake war on Christmas. Apparently, this was, seriously, I'm being dead serious. I actually marked notes, didn't see it today, just so I could see if we can get to the end of December, at least past Christmas, without one talking head in the news going, here's what's really important, there's a war on Christmas. There's never been a war on Christmas. No one's ever once come up to me in my entire life and said, you can't say Merry Christmas. But when there's nothing else to talk about, and when the normal chaos is just the news of the day, somebody rolls this whole war on Christmas bullshit out, and people get their undies in a bundle, and they get worked up over nothing. Well, now we got something to be worked up over. A worldwide pandemic. Millions of people have been affected. I have six friends of mine that were here last Christmas that weren't here this Christmas to call me. Six. And the perspective shift that happens when we go from a faux, fake, made-up war on Christmas once again, you know, we got to roll out the war on Christmas. Not this year, because there was an assault on humanity from a virus. And so to me, that should be the indicator that when things roll back to, quote, whatever we think normal is, there won't be any room for that war on Christmas crap. Shouldn't be allowed. First person to open their mouth should be off the air. I find it fascinating. And if you can follow me on this, that we, you know, especially the industry that I'm in, the media, drudging things up, majoring in minor things that aren't even real to get ratings and to get people's backs up. All the while, so much more important to go on. Those are the headlines we don't need. It's the lifelines underneath it that are far more important. And so when I was watching Scrooge the other day, I started to go back and read it a little bit, as I always do. And so I thought I would just, I know it's after Christmas, but so what? These are the lessons of Christmas. This is what is supposed to be in our hearts every day to the best of our ability. This is from stave one. You are fettered, said Scrooge, trembling. Tell me why. I wear the chain I forged in life, replied the ghost. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Scrooge trembled more and more. Or would you know, pursued the ghost, the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as full and heavy and as long as this chain 7 Christmas Eves ago, and you have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. Business, cried the ghost, wringing his hands again. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. As I said, I watch this every Christmas Eve, morning early if I can, as long as I can remember. And every time I watch it, and that part shows up where Marley's ghost is just scaring the living shit out of Scrooge, which even isn't enough to get him changed right then. He's got to go through the past and the present and the future to do that. I'm reminded whenever I see those links and chains on Marley that every second we have a choice. Every second. To add another link to the chain or break free from our lower nature and set ourselves free. And in doing so, then we give permission for other people to do the same. This is from Stave 2 by Dickens. Spirit, are they yours? Scrooge could say no more. They are man's, said the spirit, looking down upon them, and they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both, and all of their degree, but most of all beware this boy, for on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. From Stave 3. The finger pointed from the grave to him and back again. No, spirit. Oh, no. The finger was still there. Spirit, he cried, tightly clutching at its robe. Hear me, I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I have been. But for all this intercession, why show me this if I am past all hope? For the first time, the hand appeared to shake. Good spirit, he pursued, is down on the ground as he fell before it. Your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I have yet may change these shadows that you have shown me by an altering my life. The kind hand trembled. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it there all year round. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me, I may sponge away the writing on this stone of my grave. In this time of great political upheaval and discourse, I am reminded by the ghost of Christmas yet to come that I've never seen Democrat, Republican, Independent, Conservative, Liberal, or Other on a grave marker. However, I have, and so have you, seen father, mother, sister, brother, son, and veteran etched in stone. No matter the form of our politics, the expression of our faith, we all end up in the same dirt in some way, shape, or form. It's so interesting to me that the cemeteries of the world are filled with people we might have totally disagreed with and hated in life, but end up being our next plot neighbors in death. Kind of ironic. On social media and other platforms make it easy to let the lower energies become the main focus in life, like, oh, there's a war on Christmas. No, there's not. It becomes a rabbit hole of anger and angst and apathy. As Dickens pointed out, ignorance and want are our own children that we've created, walking hand in hand with us, never far away. They are the reminders of the gaps in our spiritual DNA. Our time grows short, friends, and the shadows are always closer than we think. As I said, those six friends of mine that celebrated Christmas last year, they're not here to do it with their families this year. I have three gifts for you. A reminder from my friend Molly Creeley, who passed a year and a half ago. Missed terribly. This was her message. Be positive. Be kind. Be loving. Those three gifts can change your life and everyone in your orbit. They cost nothing, but they have a great return on investment. Humankind is our business. No matter what else anybody else is doing, your choice is to respond and react accordingly. And in doing so, that ripple effect goes out to the world. And things change. Has been, always will be. The last piece of this was I think now my second favorite version of A Christmas Carol was on FSX, which is like a cable channel on Roku. There's so many channels, but I tuned into it because Guy Pearce was playing the lead, who I think is a great actor, and it was a much darker version of The Christmas Carol that I am used to and that you've probably seen. The indicators of child abuse and exploitation and certain liberties back in the day were all inferences, and that is what made Scrooge who he was, very blatantly shown on this show. And it was a miniseries. I actually sat through the whole thing. It was like 3 hours long. I was fascinated, captivated by it. But in there was dialogue that I had not heard before. They obviously had incorporated things that were not in the original writing of Dickens, and then interwove some of the traditional stuff. But at one point, Guy Pearce's as Scrooge was talking about with Bob Cratchit about how ridiculous it seemed that we only celebrate Christmas one day a year. He says, to a greater or lesser degree, he says, it is the height of hypocrisy to him that one day a year we would then set aside our differences and that we would greet each other with Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and blessings to you on that one day. And then the other 364 days a year, skip all that. As if one day a year could be the redemptive point. And his suggestion was, why wasn't Christmas be 364 days a year with all of that? And then one day a year, we get to tell people what we really think about them. I think that was fascinating to me. I've never once given that any kind of thought in that direction. I thought it was brilliant what they talked about in the movie. 364 days of Christmas, with blessings and balance and forgiveness and all that goes along with what we hope the season brings. And then one day a year, you can just let loose. The point they were making is we have it backwards. That one day a year, we put aside our differences and wish each other well. And then go back to beating the snot out of each other mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. What if it was the opposite? Well, I think in some ways, what Dickens was getting at was that's the deal. He just didn't spell it out like they did. That the idea of Christmas, while celebrated one day out of the year here in the United States and other places in the world, that's fantastic. But the idea is that all of a sudden you carry it with you wherever you go the rest of the year. That's what it's all about. That's where it comes in that humankind is our business, as I said. We have so much, each of us. It's all a matter of perspective. If you're here to listen to this one more time, and there's a myriad of ways. Far as I know, only one of those people that passed in the last year was from the Cyrus the virus. All the rest were other ways that their time was up. And does it make it any less painful? But I'm also reminded, too, that their cause of death is nothing compared to their causes in life. Each and every single one of these people were just gifts to me. And what they did has made a huge difference in the experience of being alive. And while I miss them terribly, I also miss everything they brought to the dance. And so I try to, in some way, shape, or form, do a little bit to hold up their work, if I could possibly do it. And so how you die is not important. We're all going to die. We're all headed to the same dirt. Some above ground, some in the ground, some spread around the ground, whatever. The end is inevitable. What's not inevitable is how we live till we get to the end. That's a choice. That's what it's all about. And that your cause in life is far more important than your cause of death. And so finally, when the movie ended, of course, isn't it not about redemption? Isn't it not about redeeming yourself no matter how much of a you-know-what you've been your whole life? I have friends of mine that it's pretty hard-ass guys that it wasn't until they lost a child or they finally put the bottle down or they were finally able to let go of an old grudge or eke out the words, I forgive you, and forgive themselves that it wasn't until that happened that they were able to find some measure of a deep breath in their life. I think in so many ways, life is about taking serious deep breaths and having our breath taken away. And the best way to do that I know of is to make sure that you keep Christmas in your heart all year round. I specifically waited till the day after Christmas to do this because that's the point. The holiday on the calendar is over. The sales are over for the most part. You know, we'll be taking our decorations down, the celebration, we'll pack all that stuff away. What you can leave out is your humanity. What you can leave out is your ability to change yourself and other people. And what you can leave out is majoring in minor things. Leave that out because life is about majoring in major things. It's too short otherwise not to. I hope that this finds you well. I thank you for listening and your support over the past few years. The subscribers who make this all possible, you know who you are. And thank you so much for that. Just an incredible, incredible, incredible gift. Until next time, take care, safe travels, adios. Calling me home, come on home.
like there's no one to mend all my broken down dreams. I hear a voice deep inside me, tenderly calling to me, singing, home, come on home. Ye who are weary, come home. Softly and tenderly calling, home, come on home. So don't be afraid of the darkness, and don't run away from the storm. And face your reflection, the feelings you try to ignore. After the tempest is over, you let yourself go on through. You'll hear a voice in the silence, tenderly calling.